Sale is on now at Berry Electric and Lighting Supply on the Berry Montpelier Road.
Maplefields and Irving want you to ski for free. Fill up three times with Irving gasoline at their newest Maplefield store in downtown Newport, just off I-91 in St. Johnsbury, or any other Maplefield Irving locations, and you'll be eligible to receive a buy one, get one free lift pass at great local mountains like Burke, Jay Peak, Smugs, and Bolton Valley. With these new Maplefield locations, a great cup of coffee is never far away when you're on your way for an exciting day at the slopes. Come see them during their grand opening celebration in St. Johnsbury on January 22nd, 23rd, or 24th for awesome specials and prizes.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, my goodness, another chilly day out there today. Thanks for spending part of it with us. Remember, your long underwear, maybe an extra pair of socks today. Thanks for joining us on the program this morning. Coming up in our second hour, we're going to chat with the new head of Vermont Gas. Don Rendell will be joining us. Among Don's first jobs that he, when he took over on the 1st of January, and come out and explain a pretty significant cost increase in their big gas pipeline. So we'll talk about that. Any other issues that you would like to speak with him about, he'll be joining us coming up at about 10:15 this morning. And a reminder that coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon, I'll be down at the State House. Governor Shumlin will be giving his budget address. This will be an interesting budget this year because big deficit, $93 million plus, with a governor who has vowed to not raise broad-based taxes. So that will be the Rubik's Cube for this afternoon. Our numbers on the program, we'd love to hear from you this morning. You can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. I'll be back at the State House coming up on the program tomorrow. We'll be joined among the guests that will join us, Senator Dick Sears and Governor Shumlin. Again, our numbers this morning, any day, you can reach us at 244-1777. And our toll-free lines are 877-291-8255. Joining us right now, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Bob Stannard. Bob is the author of How to Survive the Recovery, A Vermont Perspective. I asked Bob how he wanted me to introduce him, and it was like a half an hour later that I was finally able to boil this down. He's done so many different things here. He was a one-time member of the Vermont House of Representatives, longtime lobbyist. He is a coffer, and he also was a musician and plays the harmonica. And he also is now an author, and he hails from Manchester, and he's one of those people that thinks he's kind of amusing. Good morning.
What do you mean, thinks he is kind of amusing?
Well, no, that is amusing. That's what I meant.
Hold on.
You knew that.
Let's not start off on the wrong foot here.
I mean, don't you hate that? All these people out there that think that they're really, really funny people, but really deep down, they're not.
Oh, it's tragic. It is a sad thing to witness, really. It's like a busload of children going off the cliff.
So are you
very happy? Few people are funny.
That's true. Fortunately,
for you, I happen to be one of them.
Well, who do you look out there and say, that person's really funny? So tell me somebody that would fit that category for you, beside me.
Well, you were my first choice, because I've always found you to be just hysterical. Your appearances in Vermont this week, I can barely contain myself. I have to actually walk out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Other than you and George Carlin.
But none of the others.
But George Carlin's not here, so, he would be a late funny guy.
Right.
I consider you to be an early funny guy.
Bad language, too, coming from him.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, bad language is sorely underestimated. Book is full of bad language.
I was going to say, you use quite a bit in this book.
My first book had no bad language in it and didn't sell at all. So this book, obviously, will just inundate me with cash because it's just full of foul language.
Well, that probably will be the tipping point there. Now, do you laugh at the other panelists on Vermont this week or only at me?
No, the other panelists, no, they're, good Lord, no, they aren't funny. You know, Anne Galloway, no, she looks like a deer caught in the headlights. She's not funny. Even Stuart Ledbetter, who obviously has made a career of desperately trying to be funny. I can see him quaking when you're one of the guest panelists. Mm. It makes him very anxious. And frankly, that those shows... where you're on are detrimental to his career. It makes it very hard for him. You can feel it as a viewer.
But it kind of, when that cut up Nancy Remsen's on, it kind of takes away from my humor, don't you think?
Yeah, it's never a good idea to book the two of you together because she actually, she can dwarf you. If the lighting is right and the camera angle is good.
Right, exactly. And the makeup is applied just correctly.
Yeah, like with a roller, yeah.
So you have actually, let's talk a little bit about your book.
God, let's not talk about the book. I don't even remember anything about the book. I wrote it a year ago, so
okay.
I can barely
remember. Were you like hammered the whole time you wrote it or something?
I'm hammered the whole time. So when I wrote the book, it was, coincidental.
Got it. Let's talk about somebody that you've met in your life who has been described as the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah, that would be me.
How about the other person that falls into that category that's actually gotten the registered trademark designation?
He's the guy in the billboards all around the country. That guy?
Yeah, that guy.
His name is Jonathan Goldsmith. He professes to be, we should take this back now. He's not the most interesting man in the world. He actually is an actor who plays the most interesting man in the world. And even the character that he portrays doesn't hold a candle to me as far as being interesting. I mean, that guy's pretty cool and does some pretty cool stuff, but.
And drinks Dos Equis beer.
Which is,
don't say it.
No, I can't. This is a family show, right? What time of day is it? Is it late?
No, it's early. It's family viewing hour.
Okay, well, it's not the... It's good beer. Let's just say it's good beer.
Okay.
So there's no legal ramifications.
But you know this guy. You seriously know this guy.
I know everybody.
He lives down
there. I know you, the funniest person, with the exception of me, the funniest person in this room. By the way, this room has really changed a lot since I was here 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a lot more coffee stains and... more black mold than there was when I was here before.
It hasn't changed much in about 400 years, actually. So tell us how you know the most interesting man in the world.
I was at a...
Focus, Bob. Here we go.
I don't talk as fast as you. I'm not used to this. Listen, this is what you do for a living. I'm honored to be here. I was at a fundraiser for Irene. Remember the little storm that caused some havoc? Sarah Lee Guthrie and Johnny Irons were the headliners at a little fundraiser down at the Perfect Wife in Manchester, and I had the occasion to sit in with them because I'm a rock star and I hang out.
Free will and cuisine down there?
free will. As a matter of fact, I've heard that. Yes, it's free will. This is why you're the funniest person in Vermont this week.
Chef Amy Chamberlain. Can you believe I actually know that? Yeah, and her free
salad. No. Your intellect never ceases to amaze me and other listeners out there.
All right, back to the Dos Equis.
Anyway, so he's sitting in front of me. We're having a little auction, and I said to my wife, that's the guy that plays the most interesting man in the world. And she goes, no, it's not. He wears glasses, and he's got a diamond in his ear, and it's not the same guy. And I said, no, it is. And I tapped him on the shoulder and said hello, and he could care less, as is often the case when I tap people on the shoulder and say hello. A week later, I was at the Spiral Press Cafe at the North Shore Bookstore. By the way, the North Shore Bookstore is the publisher of this very fine book, unbelievably funny book. And this is the second book that they've published for me, but that notwithstanding, he is at the cafe. And I went over and said hello, and after some pleasantries, I'm wearing kind of a goofy hat, and he asked me if I fished. And I said, I'm from Vermont. I kill things and eat things. That's what we do here. And so he invited me to go fishing, and... I highly insulted him the very first. I mean, I didn't know this man, and he asked me to get the cooler of them put in the boat. And I said, I hope it's not full of that
beer,
beer, that awful Dos Equis beer. And he was roundly offended, and he said he had a basement full of it, and that's what we're drinking. And I said, okay, fine. And then once we got in the boat, we started to kick off. I said, well, right here in the boat, we have the most interesting man in the world, and some two-bit actor. And
nice.
Well, you know me, Mark. I mean, I'm a classy guy, and you know, I always try to break
beat around the bush.
You know, I try to break the ice with people and make people feel comfortable and welcome in my presence. And so he hated me immediately, and you know, he said a few minutes later, he said, "I know a lot of people," and I said, "So do I." And he said, "I don't know of anybody that would have, you know, insulted me like that back there." And I said, "Well, you know, you're in Vermont, and it's kind of what we do." And by the way, I'm actually not only one of the funniest people alive, but I'm substantially more interesting than the character that you play, and obviously I'm more interesting than you. And could you please pass me another one of those beers? And I did hand him a very nice cigar, just to, you know, kind of heal things over a little bit.
Uh-huh. Cuban cigar.
Most interesting, Lee, is that he still speaks to me, which is, you know, says a lot for his character.
And this was like the breakthrough of his career late in life.
He was 68 years old when he landed the gig of a lifetime.
Unbelievable.
He'd been in about 30 or 40 films and numerous TV shows, and you couldn't pick him out of a lineup. You know,
he's probably in a few lineups in Law and Order.
He's probably in a few lineups in real life, be that as it may. He's, you know, he's from the Bronx, and he happens to be a Jewish individual who plays Mexican bandits, and he's never figured it out. He doesn't understand why Jewish people make good Mexican bandits, but it provided him with a living, and he had a really good time. And his career was over. I mean, he was 68 years old. He was pretty much done. He probably could have found bits here and there, but nothing of any consequence. And this role came up, and his wife, who Barbara, who's his manager, said, "You got to try out for this." And he goes, "And she'd get off the couch and go, you know, go apply yourself." And there were 1,000 people or so that were applying for this, and he kept getting callback after callback, and he said, "Oh, I'm not going. This is just torture. Make me go back there. I'm not going to get this, blah, blah, blah." And she boots him out the door, and it's down to 2 people, and she gets a call at like 10 o'clock at night from the casting director, who said it's between Jonathan, who's 68, and some eye candy, delicious young man who's 37. And Barbara just right out of the gate says, "How can somebody 37 years old possibly be the most interesting man in the world?"
And nice.
There's a pause in the phone, and the casting director says, "Tell Jonathan he's got the gig." And there goes a whole nother career. So he's... as I said before we went on the air, I believe that this is true, that this is the most successful, longest-running television commercial in TV history. And he's
reaping the benefits.
And he's my fishing partner.
Now, does he get the joke? Does he get the joke, I mean, of being the most interesting man in the world? I mean, that's just outrageous.
He reminds me periodically when I say somewhat cynical or caustic comments to him, he will look me in the eye and he'll say, "You know, I'm an icon, you know. You understand that? I'm an icon." And I said, "Well," and I would have to remind him that I'm the one that's written 2 books and published 3 CDs. And, you know, I've had a very illustrious career. And then he, of course, counters with, "Yes, but it's my face on billboards all around the world." And, you know, it's a hammer that I'm okay with.
And he actually drinks that stuff?
Yes, he does. Well, listen, he's got a cellar full. It's free. Sure.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's like a starving actor up until he was 68.
So. You don't think he empties the bottles and puts other beer in there instead and recaps?
There was a charming story when we were out fishing at one point, and when you fish with him, he's on the phone constantly, talking to lawyers and agents and people. His phone rings all the time. He's fishing with one hand and he's talking with the other. And
how does he drink beer?
Well, something has to be put down, and there came a time where he had to
speakerphone.
He had to get rid of some of the beer he'd been ingesting. So instead of using a little bucket that we carry on the boat, I offered him my empty Dos Equis beer bottle, as I had my iPhone up, prepared to take a photograph.
Nice.
There was some pushback.
You think he could have just refilled that bottle and kind of
I liked the image. I thought it would be a great picture. And I told him, I said, "Listen, your career's almost over. This is a money shot for your friend here. And you got to stop thinking of yourself for a change and think of other people." The pushback was really severe. I mean, he was very grumpy about it. And he's a real poor sport. I couldn't get a photograph of him you know, discharging into an empty Dos Equis. But think about that for just a minute.
Yeah,
tell me that's not a money picture.
Boy, you could imagine how much you could have made up.
I could have easily have paid for, you know, my gas coming up here today for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely. You could have actually bought everybody in Vermont a copy of your book.
And just handed it out for free.
Not even
pretty
bother.
Much what I'm doing, actually.
We're talking with Bob Stannard. He's the author of How to Survive the Recovery, A Vermont Perspective. And you can join us on the phone if you would like. You can at 244-1777. That's our local number.
You talk to people from outside the studio?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a talk show. You didn't tell me people calling in.
Oh, yeah.
No, we don't, we don't want to talk to other people.
The other thing I think I forgot to mention to you is it is a live show. So,
oh, this is live?
Yeah.
So I have to, I've read all the bad words I can't say in the back of my hand.
Yeah, like all the, I highlighted them in the book.
Yeah, it's pretty much most of the book. And that's why we can't really read from the book.
So why did you decide to, I mean, it is littered with swear words. What's up with that? Why'd you do that?
Oh, I swear awful. I swear like a pirate.
All right.
And my first book was sort of the same way. And then I said, well, that's really terrible. I can't put all those swear words in that book. And then I decided now that I'm... because when I wrote my first book, I was still, you know, like working. And I was responsible and I had to, you know...
Accountability.
Be careful and accountability. Well, now I'm retired and I... you've seen the movie Django Unchained?
Yes.
Good
yes.
movie, right? Well...
I don't know.
Well, okay.
It wasn't violent enough for me.
No, it needed a slightly more violent.
Yeah.
There should have been some more blood in that movie. I agree with you. Now that I've retired, I consider my new life the white version of I call it Bob Unchained.
Okay, yes. Great. Oh, God. All right.
So that way I felt unleashed to be able to speak more freely in this book.
Okay, this is good.
And this, by the way, this particular interview is quite restricting.
Okay.
I'm having to. That's why
you're really dialing it back.
That's why the Obama-esque. Tone here is that I'm trying to be very thoughtful and not, you know, say the seven words written on the back of my hand. I'm staring at my hand.
Okay, let's go to the phone. We go to Middlebury, Quentin Tarantino.
Tarantino.
Sorry. Yeah. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. I thought that movie had ended like four times. You know, there would be some epic violent scene where everybody would, I mean, people were exploding in blood. And then there would be like another scene after that. And they'd say, how can you top this?
I thought the blood going up the side of the door over the top of the huge door of the mansion was...
Which time?
Well, probably the first time. There was a moment, a fleeting moment, where I thought that might have been over the top. But then I remembered who the director of the film was, and I said, gosh, I hope there's more to come, because I didn't want this to be the pinnacle of bloodshed. And and Tarantino, bless his heart, never disappoints. So it got a little warm.
Yeah. I mean, people are...
I suggested my wife see it.
There are people holding up other people who are already riddled with bullets as defensive shields. I thought that was pretty outrageous.
Well, you know, if you have to think that through, a person is really not a great shield. They're you know, there's a lot of soft tissue. Unless most of the bullets hit bone, you're okay, I guess. But it's really not something you should count on. So you should try to find something slightly more substantial than holding up, you know, say you.
Right. There you go.
Although there's something to be said for that, I suppose.
Or there was that Christopher Walken movie where Martin Sheen held up the baby. Remember that movie where he shook hands with people?
Isn't that a pleasant touch? Yeah.
That was a nice one. And they actually got a photo of that. Somebody got a photo of that for the cover of Time magazine and ended Martin Sheen's presidential career right there.
Well, except that he went on the TV show.
That's right, he did.
So he ended up being president anyways. Ha ha, fool me
touché.
Once.
High five on that one, Bob. All right, let's go to the phone. We go to South Carolina. Whit, how you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing pretty well, Mark. You know, you've got a guy on there that really is funny. Now, you asked him who his favorite comedian was, and he said, I think maybe George Carlin. Well, that's also my favorite comedian as well.
That doesn't make you my friend.
Well, I know, you know, but everybody needs friends. This is what I'm told all the time when I act in a satirical way. What is the matter with you? Don't you want any friends? So I don't know. Maybe I have to change my behavior. But I was going to say, look, I'm going to pick on you a little bit. Are you basically born in Vermont, sir?
Me? Or Mark?
Yes.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
So I like to say I have seven in the ground.
Okay, so you've got the trademark born in Vermont on your backside. Is that right?
No, I was born on my front side.
I know, but the doctor engraves that on the backside, born made in Vermont.
It's not engraved. It's a stamp.
Oh, there you go.
Would you like me to check?
Anyway, keep up the good work.
I could check. Is this TV or radio?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't do TV because I'm too ugly and I'm too old.
No, I don't disagree with that.
Well,
since it's radio, I'll show you the stamp, Mark.
There you go.
All right.
Well, anyway, keep it up, and I hope you get lots of snow up there this year.
Is there a question?
I'm just saying that...
You're trying to be my friend, aren't you?
I agree with you. I think Mark sometimes comes in the morning and he's a little bit on the I don't know, a little
what,
bit
what do you mean by sometimes?
But you know, the way to get through life is don't take it too seriously, man.
Right. That's very serious.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I try not to be serious.
All right, send me your email and phone number. We'll be friends.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for your call.
Get off the phone.
244. You know, you could fill in for me. You're rude enough, you could fill in for me.
That's what we're doing here.
Oh.
I am kind of filling in for you.
Okay. All right. Let's go.
I'm hoping that you pick up your funny jobs here at some point.
Okay.
Think about Vermont this week and think about how hysterical you are on that show.
Okay. All right. Let me think of it.
Sitting next to Nancy and Neil Goswami. Wow.
Whoa, that dude. What a cut-up.
Man, is that. Oh my gosh. My liver hurts just thinking about Neil.
Let's go to Cabot. Tony, good morning.
Good morning. Listen, I don't want to talk to your guest. I want to ask you a couple of questions about your guest.
Oh, well, that makes me feel special.
Turn his mic down there because he's taking over the show. We can't have this.
I'll give him his harmonica to play with here. Play with your harmonica.
Hang on. That's exactly. I'm sorry. Were you saying something?
And Mark, I think he's probably wearing the same outfit that's on the cover of his new album. And it's a black suit, very sharply dressed, black hat with a bright red band around it, black shirt, bright red tie, and the most hideous bright red shoes you've ever seen. But it all works together.
Oh my God! But, how did you know that?
You know, you're almost right on that. The only difference between that photograph and what I'm wearing today is that I have no pants on.
I did that once at a conference, and I got thrown out, but that's a different story.
I'm really glad this is radio.
He's pumping his book, and that's probably a good thing, but I just don't want folks to forget that this guy is a virtuoso blues man. Not just the harmonica. He's a singer as well.
This guy is my friend.
Don't tell him I know
that last guy, I could care less about this. I like this
song,
guy.
You know, and there'll be no keeping him down, but... I want people to know that...
You're from Cabot, Vermont, or Cabot Cheese?
What's that about Cabot Cheese? You're striking close to home now.
Tony's a fly fisherman, too. He's a very excellent fisherman.
How's that going today?
It's great. I got to cut a great big long trough in the ice in order to make a cast, but it's worth it.
Ah, that a boy. Good. Good.
Maybe you could get the Dos Equis guy and Tony and all go out in the boat together. Then you can insult two people.
Sure. Where I can walk home because I've been in boats before where there's been trouble, motor trouble, leaks, and all that kind of stuff. So I only fish where I can walk home.
Oh, well, okay.
That'll limit your scope a little bit. Tony,
that makes it difficult to carry enough beer if you're...
Hey, thanks for plugging my album. I hadn't actually thought about plugging my music. I am a really good musician, and thanks for bringing that up.
Wow.
Okay. You're my new friend.
Huh. Well, ego trouble today?
What have I?
You're such a good musician. I'm clearly having a little ego issue this morning.
An ego issue?
Yeah. Yeah. Self-confidence issues.
I've done three CDs. I've written two books. I've been a lobbyist. I've been a state rep. I've hosted a television show. What do you mean an ego?
Wow.
What do you mean an ego issue?
Wow, that you know you are the most interesting person in America.
So in the world,
what was one term in the House? Is that you were a one termer?
No, I was a three termer. No, I tricked them three times. I always thought it was a typo in the ballot kind of deal. But no, I served from 82 to 88. I was a very important person. If you don't think so, you just go over in that building. What I like to affectionately refer to as now as the Petri dish. And see all the unbelievably and nearly unbearably important people that are over there.
What did you accomplish in three terms, Bob?
What did I accomplish?
Now you're repeating my questions.
Well, it's an Obama moment. I went to work every day on behalf of the taxpayers, and I was attentive. I failed at most things I've ever done, Mark, as you know, and I desperately tried to become an alcoholic while I was there, and I failed at it, but it wasn't for lack of trying. Legislatively, no, I didn't really do much legislatively, but I got to meet some great new people, and I made a really big impression, I think, over there. People still come up to me and say, we miss you.
Well, grease the skids for your next career as a lobbyist, right?
Yeah, I took 5 years off. You know, most people don't know this. When I was defeated, because I changed parties and I created the first Democratic majority in the House in the history of the state of Vermont and that kind of thing.
Kind of like Jim Jeffords.
Well, only 15 years before. I like to refer to what Jim did as doing a standard.
Right.
Now you blew my whole train of thought.
So no, you lost the election. I can remind you.
Oh yes, yes, and I took 5 years. I'm old, you know. I took 5 years off, and I was vice president and general manager of a waste hauling and recycling business. I'm one of the few people that you've ever interviewed who went from politics to garbage and saw it as a promotion, and actually got paid more money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not most people do that.
So why'd you lose your re-election bid? What happened?
I changed parties, man.
And people didn't, what people didn't respond.
Some people didn't notice, you know, because the voters are, this guy Gruber, he kind of pegged him. Anyways.
Okay. Right.
Some people had no clue, but the party that I left, which was the Republican Party, they took it kind of hard.
Okay. Did you leave the Republican Party, or did the Republican Party actually leave?
Well, that was my
Bob.
Argument. I was left in the dust, I thought, yeah. Uh-huh. Look, we got...
Did you use that line when you left, and then Jeffords recycled it when he pulled the standard 15 years later?
You know, the thing of it is, most people recycle my material, and I get very little credit for it. But yes, that's exactly what happened. I mean, he stole my stuff, and I called him on it. I called him up, and I said, Jim... a little credit, please.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me he would, and, you know, didn't. I still like the guy. I mean, he was great. He was a rock star.
It's good. Barry, Larry, good morning. How are you?
Larry from Barry.
Bob, I think the reason maybe that you left the Republican Party, or they left you, is because you hung around with Tim Corcoran too long. Some of the antics you two guys used to pull. I think that's what you should have written the book about.
Now, hang on just a minute. You're tarring me here with a brush, more of a roller. Well, actually, one of those 2 feet rollers, not just a small 12-inch roller.
Well, don't you think that book would go over well?
A book about Tim Corcoran?
About some of the things that you and Corcoran pulled off together.
Well, now, when you say you and Corcoran pulled off together, I'm not so sure that I can take the credit for some of the things that occurred. And I think they were mostly Tim. I was an innocent bystander in most of these events.
Of course.
It'd be an interesting book. I'm always, when I write a book, you know, it's you have to think about the legal ramifications of, putting your thoughts into words. Not that I've ever really done that, but you should think about that. How did you know Tim Corcoran?
The same way I knew you.
How do you know me, Larry from Barry?
At the State House.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
See, okay. Bob, here's a decision point here. Do you explore this further, or do you just let this lie right where it is?
Pretty much want to thank him for calling.
I'm going to let you take it now.
Yeah.
Okay.
We served time together, Larry?
Yeah, we served time together.
That was you in the cell then, huh?
At the State House.
Oh, okay. Well, don't get too close. Don't get too close now.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Right. I can't wait.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255.
He served with me, you said.
When you fill out employment applications and it says, have you ever been arrested, how do you answer that question?
Well, what do you think if you're trying to get a job? You know, what are you supposed to tell the truth on those applications? Good Lord.
Okay.
Of course, I put down N-A.
Not applicable.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, when we come back, we're going to find out why we should all be...
Are you doing that Don guy now, or am I out? No.
No. He's coming up at 10:15.
Oh.
Yeah. No, you're not quite done yet.
He's got really great hair, by the way. I had my hair done just for this show, and then I found out it was radio.
Okay. Yeah, you kind of got the Todd Bailey cut, apparently. When we come back, we're going to find out why we need to be all so thankful to Bob, because we probably, none of us would be here today were it not for his relatives. We'll be back after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Buzz from Poulin Auto Sales and Service. I'd like to introduce you to one of our Poulin team members. He'd like to tell you in his own words what sets Poulin apart from the rest.
Thanks, Buzz. I've been at Poulin Auto Sales for about 6 months, and I've got to tell you, Poulin's is not like any other dealership when I interviewed. I was a little nervous whether or not my style would actually fit in here. You know, I don't believe in putting people in cars that I wouldn't put my family in, or having them sign deals that I wouldn't sign myself just so I can put a few extra dollars in my pocket. And that's exactly what I told Buzz. Then he looked me straight in the eyes and said,
I wouldn't have it any other way. As a matter of fact, if you don't put our customers' needs first, we're going to have a real big problem. Basically, what I'm telling you is this. You're our top priority. And we're not going to put you in a car that you can't afford or soak you into hidden fees. What you see is what you get. Poulin Auto Sales and Service is the We Care dealership. We're changing the way you feel about buying a car. Visit us on Eastbury Road in Barrie or on Shelburne Road in South Burlington. And we're always open at PoulinAutoSales.com.
Green Mountain Power, Vermont's energy company of the future, is offering an exciting new line of energy-efficient products and services, like heat pumps and water heaters to save you money, up to 50% compared to oil and propane, improve the comfort of your home, and help the environment by using less energy. To learn more, visit GreenMountainPower.com or call 888-835-4672. Green Mountain Power, generating possibilities together.
There's a four-letter word that's part of everyone's language. In fact, it's a word that everyone loves to use. That four-letter word is sale. And when it comes to sales, no one does it quite like Novello Furniture on the Barrymont-Pilier Road. Their January clearance sale is going on now till Monday, January 19th at 5:30 p.m. You'll be able to save up to 70% off list on Novello's incredible selection of quality furniture and accessories. Recliners, living room and bedroom sets, dining room furniture, desks, lamps, tables, and bedding. Now is the time to get that one-of-a-kind chair in trendy fabrics. The list goes on and on. In fact, Novello Furniture has a new Lazy Boy gallery, and it's all marked down. And Sealy Posturepedic mattresses are lower than ever before. Now, what was that four-letter word? Sale. At Novello Furniture. Hurry in. Sale ends January 19th. Novello Furniture on the Barrymont-Pilier Road. Better furniture for less.
I'm Tracy Towers. I've been a dental hygienist in Vermont for 24 years. I believe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure because I've seen firsthand the destruction that sugary drinks cause. Toddlers come into the office with soda-filled sippy cups. Teenagers are hooked on sugary sports drinks, and adults consume cases of soda per month. Despite our best efforts at educating our patients, there seems to be no decrease in consumption. Making the healthier choice the easier choice by taxing sugary drinks can help. Learn more at healthiervt.org.
Hi, folks. Todd Mobley here from Formula Ford in Montpelier. Our team at Formula Ford want to help you celebrate the new year and keep you warm with some hot deals. The 2015 redesigned Ford Focus has finally arrived. One of the best-selling cars of all time just keeps getting better. Stop in to see the new design or take advantage of remaining 2014 Focuses in stock with giant New Year's savings. You could take advantage of 0% financing up to a full 72 months to qualified buyers. Or choose to take up to $4,000 off any new 2014 Focus in stock when you finance with Ford. And if leasing is more to your liking, how about leasing a brand new Ford Focus for under $239 a month to qualified buyers with absolutely no money out of your pocket? And the deals don't stop there. You can find incredible New Year's deals on all of our top sellers like Fusion, C-Max, Escapes, Explorers, and of course the mighty F-150 and Super Duty trucks. Formula Ford on the roundabout at the junction of Route 2 and 302 in Montpelier, or visit us from the comfort of your home online 24 hours a day at FormulaFordVT.com.
All right, we're back, and we've been talking this morning. Bob Stannard is the author of How to Survive the Recovery, A Vermont Perspective. He's was a longtime lobbyist down at the State House, served three terms in the House, more than one, is also a musician. I'm trying to get my past and present here. It's so confusing, Bob.
Jesus. And don't leave anything out if you.
No,
if you
I mind. Mean, once I start going, it's like thanking people at the Academy Awards. How can I not include here that you're an author?
Yeah.
What did I miss here? I got the harmonica thing in there.
Yeah. Lobbyist thing.
Yep, got that.
Yeah, musician, TV show host.
Let's talk about your cohort in crime here on this book, Jeff Danziger, who wrote a really interesting piece the other day saying that Vermont should be included in the New Hampshire primary, which I thought was sort of an interesting concept.
What do we call it? The Vermont Share Primaries?
And something like that. Right. Yeah. Well, we could just call it the Vermont Primary starring New Hampshire or something like
Live
that.
Live free or vote?
Yeah, I think maybe we need to work on this
one. The Green Hampshire State?
How about Unity and Die?
We should.
Jeff Danziger.
I mean, we should be first in everything. And why New Hampshire primary takes precedent, I don't understand primaries at all. I've only been in politics for 3 years. I don't have any idea how they work, why they work, who gets to go first. But I think that we should attack New Hampshire. We should just do a run on them.
From the west, or should we kind of circle back around?
We'd kind of have to come from the west, because then we'd have to, like, send a boat down. It would be very complicated to attack them from the east. I think we just go over the border and buy some cheap liquor, because it's cheaper over there, and cheaper cigarettes.
We'd go up through Canada and then back down through, too.
Yeah, but then you got the whole customs thing, which is going to be very difficult.
Oh, they never check you when you go up there.
Is that right?
Yeah,
no, they check you when you come back, though.
That's the real problem.
I've always had difficulty getting back in this country. I know your listeners would find that hard to believe. I have trouble getting back home, actually. We have to have a discussion with the missus before I'm even allowed back in the house.
So you're one of those mouthy people at the border when they say, do you have anything in the car? And you say, yeah, you know, all those people in the back in the trunk and all those Cuban cigars I'm bringing in to give to the most interesting man in the world.
Other than saying, what's it to you, I will tell you that I was coming back into this country from the Dominican Republic. I'm in a long line at JFK, and I'm thinking, boy, this is boring. And a very handsome, tall, slick-back, black-hair guy named Mr. Ortiz points to me and my wife and pulls us out of line. I'm at the time 50 years old, and I'm thinking to myself, this is very charming of this man to let us cut in front of all the great unwashed. And we get over there, and he says to my wife, empty your backpack. Well, when you have an inappropriate amount of Dominican rum and cigars that shouldn't really be, you know, in the backpack, the last thing you want to hear is empty your backpack.
You lowlife, you put that stuff in your wife's backpack?
Well, some of it, but no, one bottle of rum. Most of it was in my backpack. I was a lot more apprehensive about my backpack. And he looks at me, and he can just tell that, and people, this happens to me a lot. They look at me, and they think there's something askew. And so Mr. Ortiz looks at me, and as he's about to rip open my backpack, says to me, do you have any pork? And that was the exact same thing that I did. And laughing at immigrations guy, the customs guy, is never, ever your good first move. But I couldn't help it. It struck me as being hysterical. And he looks at me with these dark eyes and says, what's so funny? I said, well, Mr. Ortiz, I'm 50 years old, and I'm sitting here thinking about your question, and of all the things I could have been busted for in an airport in the course of my lifetime, a ham sandwich wasn't one of them. He pulls the drawstrings on my pack, throws it at me, and says, get out of here. And my poor wife says, oh, Lord, we're going straight to jail. But we were able to cut in line.
Uh-huh.
And I was very grateful to Mr. Ortiz on a variety of levels.
Okay. All right. Jeff Danziger.
He's a cartoonist.
Yeah. So you know him pretty well. Pretty tight with him, huh?
Never met him.
Okay.
He's done two of my books, and we've never met.
Okay.
But you're right, though. He's a very good guy, a very generous man.
How would you know that, having not ever met him?
Well, I've heard this from other people that are very close to him, have told me what a great and generous man he is. He's done two of my books. Almost about time we meet. I think we're scheduled to meet on February 13th. He is doing an appearance. He has a new book out. Have you seen his book?
No.
You should see it. Actually,
I should probably have him on.
Well,
might cut into your time.
I mean, let's not cut into my time with Jeff on the show.
That's rude, talking about other guests.
I don't know how much time you spend in the gym, but you're going to want to work out some to look at this book. This is the biggest book I've ever seen. I mean, physically, it's a big book. It's like 2 feet by 18 inches. It's this gargantuan book, and it's about 2 inches thick. I happen to have a copy. I had, three people help me get it to the car. But he will be at the North Shore Bookstore in Manchester, Vermont on February 13th at a book signing. which I guess you could probably use a 4-inch brush to sign this book. It's so huge.
Right.
And I am making it a point to go to this book signing. Now, I'm not going to be looking like this. Obviously, I'll wear, you know, my Groucho Marx mask and glasses and big mustache and big nose so he doesn't recognize
me.
Low key, you know, so he doesn't recognize me. Just in the event that he, you know, still harbors ill feelings toward me for having him do two books.
Well, you paid him, right?
Well, yeah, what? When you say pay,
money. I'm
that means
about
an exchange of currency. Yeah, well, there was. On the first book, there was an exchange of currency. On the second book, when I told him that I could afford to pay a little more, you know, this time than the first time around, he charged me the same amount of money. And I didn't tell you this off the air. I had a common thing that happens with most people. I just forgot to pay him. And he actually called me up and said,
dude, where's my money?
Yeah, pretty much like that, although slightly edgier than
did
the way
he say,
you,
I know people, like the most interesting
yeah,
one did?
Yeah, it was like, you sending me a check or what? And I
and you said, who is this?
Yeah, well, it could have been a Dead Sea Scrolls list of people that I could have rolled out there. And once I realized it was him, because he did come up on caller ID, and I said to myself, oh, dear, I inadvertently had not sent him the check. And I actually told him, and this is the first time I've ever said this, I felt badly. I don't usually feel badly when I don't pay, but in this case, I mean, he was so generous, I didn't feel badly. But I said, listen, while I got you on the phone,
I'm doing another book.
This was the other book. I said, how would you feel about doing a blurb on the back of my book? And he says, no. Okay. And then he continued with a no by saying, I don't do blurbs on books that I've done artwork for. Okay. So what do you want me to say? Well, I didn't understand what that question meant. What do you want me to say on the book, or what do you want me to say
your
about my no policy? So as I sat there for a minute, he said, the illustrations in this book alone are worth $300. I just put it on the back of the book because I assumed that that's what he wanted for a blurb on the back of the book.
Well, he didn't say when he finished saying that, don't put that in the book. So
correct.
Therefore, it's free game.
So I just interpreted, you know, what is the definition of is, and put it on the book. And although I've not checked my mail today, I don't believe I've received letters from his attorney. So
now, if I said something nicer during the last 45 minutes or so, are you going to use that in your next book or something without asking?
Something nice that you would have said?
Yeah.
Have you said something? I haven't written anything down.
Well, I could go back and listen again.
Is this taped? Is this going to be, is this like on the web or anything?
Well, it'll be podcast, yeah.
Oh,
so
it will be?
You could pick
I wish you told me that earlier because I wouldn't have said all these things I said today because that means other people will hear them.
Well, I mean, we're just taping this for possible later use. It's not like this is actually, you know, live.
That's what the last FBI agent said to me, too.
Now, before we get too far down the road here, we do want to talk about one of your important relatives. But first, let me remind our listeners about our good friends.
All of my relatives are important.
There's one that we're going to kind of hone in on here. But first, let me remind our listeners about our friends at Green Mountain Access. This is when you don't interrupt me. Or if you have something to chime in that's positive, you can do that. Green Mountain Access is a great internet service provider. You can reach them at 1-888-321-0815. If you want to be the most interesting person in the world out there, maybe you'll have a gmavt.net email address. You don't have one of those, do you, Bob?
Oh, yeah, I've got four.
Oh, sorry.
You know, I use it all the time. As a matter of fact, it's the only one that really works.
Do you find that more interesting people contact you at your gmavt.net
account? Oh, yeah. Those are the only people I speak with.
Like the
rest
AOL?
Of them, they go straight to trash.
Well, AOL, what do you track on AOL? Like, what kind of people?
The homeless.
Shallow.
Very unfunny.
Not all homeless people are shallow, though, Bob.
No. More homeless people I know are substantially deeper than, say, you. And on other hosts of shows that I've done.
Tried to get on,
yep. Unsuccessfully.
How many times did you ask me to be on about this?
17, which was, I think, was a record. I'd have to go back, although I'm still working on VPR, and they're in the early teens.
Yeah, but see, here's
I had to go through surrogates to get to you, too, by the way.
Here's your problem.
I'm not known enough, am
I? No, once you're on this show, Kinzel's not going to want to touch you.
Well, we're just not going to tell him I'm on this show. Okay. This whole thing about the podcast, can we run the podcast, say, around 4th of July, maybe?
Well, so maybe I shouldn't mention to Bob when I see him at the State House today that I had you on and that I used up all your A material.
All my material is A material, first of all. What you can do is you can tell him that you ran into me in the diner and we had a great conversation. You might skip the part about it being on the air.
Okay.
I mean, that's not a falsehood.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of people I'd lie for, but I would not lie for you.
Oh, sure you would. Once I break out the knife and the guns, you'll be surprised what you'll do.
All right. Let's talk about, if it were not for one of your relatives, some of us might not even be here today, correct?
That'd be my father.
No. No.
Which one are we talking about?
Let's go back to Pickett's Charge.
Oh, yes. Oh, that was Civil
like,
War.
Like you were really going through all your relatives trying to figure out who I was talking
well,
about.
Well, I mean, if my father hadn't been around, where would I be? I mean, you know, think of it logically. There was an ancestor in my family, George Garrison Stannard, who was a general who did defeat Pickett at Pickett's Charge. Now, the rest of the family likes to think of George as the only member of our family that ever really amounted to anything.
Mm-hmm.
He did okay, you know, for a guy with like one arm, lost his right arm, which is, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never lost, you know, an appendage, but I would think your right arm, I mean, it's gotta hurt on many levels. There's the initial pain of the arm going, but then when you get home and you go to like open your door kind of thing and you're left-handed and, you know, that's just a struggle.
Yeah.
Which apparently overcame. Yeah, I mean, he was a brave guy, and he was very strategic. Not unlike the rest of the family, I might add. I mean, very strategic. I mean, look at, I'm on the show.
And that's like a Pickett's Charge in and of itself.
It was actually bloodier than actually a Quentin Tarantino movie. The strategically planning to get on this show, but yeah, no, he'd done good for a Stannard, really.
So where, how far back is he in your food chain?
I think he goes back four great grandfather's brother, so he's like a four great uncle.
Wow. All right.
But the DNA is so strong. I mean, it's the similarities between the two of us. Actually,
it's a lot of dilution over the years.
Well, they married strange women, yes. But still, the Stannard gene is very, very strong. If you had known me when I was first elected and walked into the State House in 83, the first thing I noticed when you walk up to the ramp going into the cafeteria was a bronze plaque that said Stannard. And that guy in the picture actually looked like me back then. I had a big red beard and I had a little side hair thing going on.
And you said, here I am. I haven't done a damn thing. And they're already putting him a
Well, I was stunned. I said, wow, I just got here and they've already done a bronze plaque to me. And of course, I got the first name wrong, but I was honored, you know. I mean, I looked around at all the other freshmen. They didn't have plaques. They must have felt terrible.
Uh-huh.
They were all coming up to me and asked me for autographs, and I said, you know,
let me serve a term.
I had to call Francis Irons and Reed Payne and have them, you know, apprehended and pulled away from me. But that happens to me a lot, you know. I mean, people are swarming around me.
I mean, that's basically why you had to stop being a lobbyist. It was too popular.
Yeah, well, you know, I was good at what I did, and I was a very popular person, loved by all. And, you know, it's tough, you know, to get through the screening, carrying weapons and keep people away from you. But anyway, back to George. You know, when he moved back to Vermont after he lost his arm, that he built jigs and made new hardware and reconverted his entire house to being left-handed. All the hinges, all the cabinets, all the door handles were left-handed.
Is this a joke? Or is this
no, this
a,
is actually this the only serious thing I've said on this show.
I'm reluctant to say, oh, okay.
Oh, look at you. Yeah. You know, it's the old peeing on electric fence. You'll do that once, but the second time,
exactly,
there's a lot more apprehension. No, that is a true story. He when he came back home, everything in the house was right-handed because hello, we're all right-handed. And he had to reconfigure his house.
Yeah, hello, we're not all right-handed, thank you.
Who's not right-handed?
I've been writing in front of you all morning. I'm glad you're so perceptive and noticing.
Yeah, but you're writing with your right hand, right?
Hey, but speaking of which, well, you're kind of looking at me in a sort of mirrorish sort of way. You do give Vermonters a lot of credit for being excellent listeners. How come? Because
they listen.
Do you remember writing that in the book?
Well, they're really, Well, they don't talk much. So if you're not talking much, you have two choices in this world. You either talk or you listen. And I'm on a talk show, and I had a little caffeine, which I never, ever do, but I did just for you, because I know this is a talk show, and the last thing you want is a lot of dead air, and it doesn't go well.
Sleepy standard.
We don't want that.
So good listeners,
But they, they kind of have to be. The education system early on was kind of weak, and, they didn't really learn how to talk much, and they're very conversational, and, so they... We're just relegated to being listeners. You pick up a lot when you listen to, Not much goes by if you're listening. That's true fact. That's what I'm told. I had a guy that delivered my firewood. I'm unbelievably reluctant to read
from it. Tell us about the guy you get the firewood from.
Oh, that's what I just opened to. Oh, that is cosmic.
That is amazing.
Are you getting a tingle? I am.
In that electric fence kind of way.
Yeah. Here's a conversation I had. This guy was Roger Secoy delivered my firewood. And he was a very interesting guy. He was an unbelievably smart guy who didn't come across when you first met him and, being the sharpest knife in the drawer. But he was really a bright guy, and he died of cancer. So my conversation, he stops in my yard in the middle of summer to check on my firewood, like I was burning a lot. And I didn't quite understand why he was in my yard, and I didn't care because I would like seeing him. So I said to him, Roger, how you doing? I'm dying. I said, of what? Cancer. You still selling firewood? Yep. You want to sell me some? I guess so. So there you go. That's a conversation that I have with Roger.
Wow. You're so compassionate, too. I mean, it just was just oozing out of that conversation, your compassion.
I am a compassionate person. Not everybody picks up on it as quickly as you have, though.
But, you ask a guy, he says he has cancer, and you ask him if he's selling firewood.
Yeah.
Like,
well, we already determined it. What do you say about that? Hey, good for you. You got cancer.
Well, and you're not a doctor.
Heavens no. Although, I could play one on TV. I've introduced myself to, some people as Dr. Standard.
Oh, come on. like who?
Oh, I can't tell you who. I mean, it's like, I'm a blues singer in a bar, and, you'll have people come up to you late at night, and they'll say, hey, what's your real name? And I'll say, my name's Doctor Stanton. Doctor Stanton.
The harmonica doctor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't say a doctor. What now?
There you go.
Professor Longhair. Dr. Professor Longhair. Now, as he said, I don't profess to be a doctor, but I could be a doctor's son. So there you go.
So
you think that was too compassionate?
Yeah, way too. I mean,
I should.
God forbid you would ask, what kind of cancer, or how are you feeling? Are you going to be undergoing any treatment anytime soon?
I'll tell you the quick story because I won't read it because it'll take forever. But the quick story was, I was trying to figure out why he was in my yard in August because I didn't really need firewood. I'd already bought my firewood 3 months ago and I wasn't burning any. And so I said, so what are you doing? He says, well, I'm taking a newbie over to Dartmouth. And I said, what's a newbie and why are you taking him to Dartmouth? And he said, well, he says, one of these well-heeled people from Manchester Village has been diagnosed with cancer and they got to go over to Dartmouth. He had been over, he had 18 operations on this cancer in his leg that he had, weird cancer, big, huge tumors were growing in his leg. So he said, no, I drive him over. Because Dartmouth's a really scary place when you've been diagnosed with cancer and you don't know that facility. And when you first get over there, it's really scary. So I take him over and I'm thinking to myself, this is the most compassionate thing I've ever heard. This is a guy with bad teeth and selling firewood, chauffeuring people over. Now, his truck was rotted out, nasty, beat to death truck. And the whole time I'm talking with him, he'd be looking at me and he was a chewer, some Vermonters chew. And he would just look at me and just spit this brown spooge on the floor of his truck, and it was slightly repulsive, but I'm a Vermonter and I'm used to
repulsive
things. And he had spit he'd spit five or six times. So I said to him, you don't take him over in this truck, do you, Rod? No, we usually take their car. And I said,
chew on the way.
I said, what kind of car do they have? Oh, he says, sometimes I get to drive their Mercedes. And I said, Well, I hope you aren't spitting on the floor of their car like they're spitting on the floor of your car. And he looks at me, doesn't even crack a smile, doesn't do nothing. He puts his left hand out the window and takes his index finger and points straight down the ground. Doesn't say anything. And I'm looking at this finger. I'm trying to figure out what that means. I back up, and I realize he'd been spitting through a hole the size of a basketball on the floor of his truck. And I had a puddle of brown spooge in my driveway. So, nice. Roger's no fool, by the way.
Bob Stanard's the author of How to Survive the Recovery, A Vermont Perspective.
The funniest book. It's the only book that you'll ever read that has a story of an exploding cow in it.
Okay. All right. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me on.
I guess
that's it. Music. What's the music saying?
That's your traveling music.
That's it. I'm out of here.
Make way for the Vermont Gas guy.
Oh, wow.
This is FM 96.1.
I can't wait to have some Vermont gas. I'll tell you that.
This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. Stay tuned for news.